dead batteries.
But I did not, and I think last time I pushed it up, my phone went too, so it is what it is.
Not what?
Good morning.
It's good to see everyone who is out. We do have several visitors who are here, and we're grateful for your presence. If it's your first time or one of the first couple of times, we'd ask that you fill out a visitor's card and get that to one of us. We would greatly appreciate that. And then I got a couple other announcements to make as well. Those of you that came in late, you may not have heard this, but last Sunday at the business meeting, we decided that the Sunday evening worship is going to begin at 4 p.m. for the months of July, August, and September, and then we'll reevaluate that again after that period. So it will be 4 p.m., and we hope that more of you will be able to come out for that. Secondly, this morning after the worship, there will be a follow-up meeting for the ladies who are getting the update of what went on last quarter with the men's meetings, and so that will be downstairs in the first classroom on the left, what we are now calling the young adult classroom. So that's about it, I think. I hope. If not, whatever. But we've been talking a lot this year about fulfilling our purpose, right? And in this quarter, we've been talking about fulfilling our purpose in the home. So we've talked a lot about parents, and we've talked a good bit about children. And we've seen that there are various purposes that we have in our home. And it kind of hit me this week that it is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you fathers out there. That the first father, is today not Father's Day? Sweet, I'm not behind. I didn't get my dad's card in the mail, so I'm not behind. Yeah. All right. Well, then, happy early Father's Day. Thank you. See, by the way, if you don't know me, if my head wasn't screwed on, it would fall off. So there you go. The first day. Yeah, purpose, right? Adam was given a purpose. And we normally notice, and I want you to open up in your Bibles to the book of Genesis. We're going to spend a lot of time there this morning. In Genesis chapter 2, we normally note verse 17 and verse 18, as Adam and Eve are in the garden, that they're given a command that there are two trees, one you can eat and one you can't eat, right? I want you to notice in verse 16 that the purpose that Adam was given was that, or verse 15, the Lord took the man and he put him in the Garden of Eden, and here's the purpose, to cultivate it and keep it. What's that mean to you? He's to keep the garden. He's to work in it. He's to maybe guard it, protect it. He does all the stuff in that, right? Well, we know what happens in verse 17 and 18. They're given the command not to touch the fruit, not to eat it. But guess what they do? They eat it, they touch it, all of that, right? So they're kicked out of the garden. And the cherubim are given a purpose. At the end of chapter 3, they're given a purpose, and you would note in verse 24 that he drove man out. That's Adam, that's Eve. He drove them out to the east of the Garden of Eden, and he stationed the cherubim and the flaming sword, which turned every direction. And here's the purpose, to guard, some of your translations may say keep. It's the exact same word. They guarded the way to the tree of life. The cherubim will put at the garden to keep anybody from entering and touching that tree of life, which if they did, they would live forever. Adam was told to guard it. He didn't guard it. Cherubim are there to guard it, right? Well, chapter 4 of Genesis carries us to another very well familiar story. We got two brothers, Cain and Abel, right? And Cain offers a sacrifice, and the Lord did not regard him nor his sacrifice. Abel offered a sacrifice, and the Lord had favor upon him, right? And what does Cain do to his brother? He killed his brother. I would suggest that based on the statement, and we know what Cain says in chapter 4, verse 9, when the Lord comes to him, and he asks him, where is your brother? And we know his answer. I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? that we've just seen in guard, in protect, in keeping. And I would suggest that Cain knew his purpose was to protect his brother. And that gets us to my role in my family. My purpose is to keep my brother. Now, I'm the baby of my family. I have two older sisters. Guess what they do their best to do? And guess what I do my best to do? Don't want it, right? But that's the purpose. We have to look out for them. And that is in a very physical relationship. And that is also in a very spiritual relationship with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And so we're going to use them kind of interchangeably today to see that. But if you're your brother's keeper, which you are to be, that is your purpose. Whether you have a physical sibling or not, you have spiritual siblings. It is my responsibility to guard them, protect them, keep them. I'm going to look at three things this morning that you need to make sure that you're doing. You notice that if you're your brother's keeper, you're looking out for your brother, right? You're looking out for your sister. And so if it's your younger sister, and dudes are coming up to your sister, they're saying things inappropriately, you ain't going to let that be. It doesn't matter how much you might fight with her at home, you're not going to let that stand. You're going to stand up for her, right? And sometimes you do it the right way. You handle it appropriately. There are some brothers who stood up appropriately. I want you to think about Joseph. Like, go to Genesis chapter 44. You remember Joseph? He was his father's favorite, which is a problem. He was his father's favorite. He had 10 older brothers. And guess what they did because of being the father's favorite? They hated him, didn't they? And he rubbed it in their face. And then he would say things like, I had a dream and you won't bow down to me. And then he'd go up to his father and his mother. I had a dream, and not only did the brothers bow down to me, you bow down to me too. And they had enough. They were fed up with their brother, weren't they? And so they shipped him off. But they weren't going to ship him off first, right? They were going to kill him. Because don't we sometimes want to kill our siblings? Yeah, we do. But they didn't. They shipped him off and he ends up down in Egypt, right? And guess what happens? They actually bow down to him. Because he's now second in command. He is saving their life because of the huge famine, and he's been placed there. And they're coming and they're begging for food. And on their second trip back, they finally bring his little brother, the one who has now taken his place as the favorite. They bring him back, and the father, Jacob, was concerned about ever letting him go to Egypt. It was a long journey, and I love him. And if I lose my two sons that I love, Joseph and Benjamin, we would say that will be the death of me. I can't handle it. I've already lost one. I can't handle both. And Judah, not the firstborn, secondborn, thirdborn, but the fourthborn. He stands up to his father and he tells him early in the book of Genesis, if anything happens to him, it's on me. I will be responsible for him. But we can't get the food unless we take him with us. It's on me. Well, they go, right? And Joseph toys with them. He puts the food in their bags, right? And he also puts the money in the bags. But in one of those bags, he puts that special little cup in. He put his own cup. And he put it in the brother Benjamin's sack. And he sends the people after him and says, whoever's got it, you bring it back to me. Well, they're like, man, we didn't take anything. And they open it up, there's the money. And then they go through all of them. They probably started the oldest and they went all the way down. And they finally get to Benjamin's sack and they open it up. And there's Joseph's cup. And Judah does exactly what he said he's going to do. Look there in Genesis chapter 44. As he gets to Joseph, and he tells him all that, I can't do this. My father will die. Well, verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, even my father is your servant. Just like that dream. And the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life. My father is tied to him. When he sees that the lad is not with us, he will die. And thus your servants will bring great care on your servant, our father, down to Sheol in sorrow. For your servant became surety for the lad. I'm the price. I took it all. So verse 33. Therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. You take me instead. You ever done that for your brother or your sister? They got in a jam, and you took the blame? That's because you were looking out for them, wasn't it? Other times, we don't handle it quite so well. Earlier, these very same brothers, right? We had one who wanted to stand up. They were going to throw him in, they were going to kill him. And they were going to lie about it. Which they did lie about it. But they were going to kill him. And the oldest kind of stood up for him, didn't he? Back in chapter 37, Reuben, the oldest, he does this in a subtle way. He says, don't kill him, but let's throw him in the pit, right? And our text tells us why he wanted to throw him in the pit. But verse 22, throw him in the pit in the wilderness. Don't lay hands on him, because he might rescue him out of their hands and restore him to his father. He had all the plans in the world of sticking up for his brother. But did he actually stand up for him at all? He didn't, because the brothers sold him into slavery. Or maybe your sister gets raped. And the guy that raped her actually loved her. And he comes in and he says, I'll give you whatever you want for your sister and for your daughter. You name the price, I'll give it to you. Well, here's the price. We can't give our daughter to uncircumcised men. We can't do it. And they weren't truthful with it. I want you to notice this in Genesis chapter 34. That these same brothers, their sister was raped. I haven't had that happen. But I guarantee you I would be furious. And they were furious. And guess what they did? They took matters into their own hands. They said, you be circumcised, and we'll give her to you. So the whole town was circumcised. And the text would tell us that on the second day, when they were still in pain, these brothers, and there were two of them, not the oldest, not Reuben, but Simeon and Levi, they took it into their hands. And notice down to verse 25. It was on the third day. So on about the third day, when there we were in pain, that was the whole village, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came into the city unawares. The city didn't even know they were coming. And they killed every male. And only one of those males had raped their sister. And they killed Hamor and his son, killed the father and the son who had done this. And they took Dinah back, their sister back. And Jacob's sons, verse 27, they came upon the slain and they looted the city because they defiled their sister. And they took their flocks and their herds and their donkeys and that which was in the city and that which was in the field. And they captured and they looted all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives and all that was in the houses. they went overboard. They just needed to take the one God. And they went after everyone and everything that they had. And so the father, Jacob, he says to him in verse 30, "You have brought trouble on me by making me odious to the people. You told them you were going to do this, and you went back on your word, and this looks poorly upon me." And the brothers said to their father at the end of verse 31, "Should he treat our sister as a harlot?" And the answer is no. And the answer is he should have paid. But not everybody else should have paid for that. And that's exactly what Jacob tells them when he's on his deathbed and he's going through the blessings of the family. He tells them because they were sons of anger. And I want you to notice that in Genesis chapter 49. As he says to them in verse 5, "My soul will not enter into their council, nor my glory unite in their assembly, because in their anger they slew men. And in their self-will they lamed." They weren't looking out for their sister anymore. They were looking out for themselves. And so cursed be their anger and their wrath, for it is cruel. Isn't that sometimes our inclination when our brother or our sister has been wronged? We go beyond what was necessary. We don't control our anger. We don't handle it the way we ought. But the desire was right to begin with, to stand up for them and to protect them. But as we saw Wednesday night in our upstairs class, self-control must be handled at all times. It's not a license to go out and take it. So you look out for it. You stand up for it. And guess what else you do for it? You warn it. You warn her. You're the older sibling. And that's the statement in Romans chapter 15 and verse 14 where there is kind of an argument between Christians and apparently between Jews and Gentiles. And he tells them that they're full of goodness and that they ought to be able because of that. Romans 15 and verse 14. "With all knowledge, able to admonish one another." Which means you warn them. You instruct them. And don't you, if you've got a younger sibling, don't you remember those talks of where you kind of see them getting a little too close and talking back a little bit more to mom and dad? Or you see them running with the wrong crowd at school? Or you just kind of see them that everything's just not adding up. And so you warn them. "You keep doing this. This is where you're going to be." If you keep, and it's different when you hear it from your sibling, isn't it, than when you hear it from your mom and dad. Because when you hear it from mom and dad, it's just like, mom and daddy. But if you hear it from that sibling, maybe someone who is close to you, and they're close in age, it just rings true a little differently. And that's what we're supposed to do with one another. We need to warn them as we're able, and as 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 14, you admonish them when it's needed. You're not just continually getting on them. You're not continually warning them and continually nagging them, but when they're needed. And in that particular text, it was when they're unruly. When they're out of line is literally the idea. You bring them back in. Did you ever do that? You saw them acting out. And you knew what was going to happen. You knew discipline was going to come from mom and dad. And so you kind of took them and like, calm down. That's in one sense an admonishment. And we need to do the same physically. We need to do the same spiritually. When you see your brother or your sister going down a road and going down a path, you warn them about that as able and as needed. Here's what we don't do when we're looking out for our brother or our sister. We don't devour, bite, and consume them. Galatians 5, we've been looking at the fruit of the Spirit in that class on Wednesday night. And the statement is made right before we get to the fruit of the Spirit about how they need to love one another and not bite, not devour, and consume one another. Now, does that ever go on in your house with your kids or with your siblings? Where you're always, we might say, you're always barking at one another. You're always getting on. You're always fighting. And it's kind of the picture of you're an animal and you're biting on them not to kind of nibble and play with them as sometimes dogs and animals do. But you're biting on them because you're angry, you're upset, and your desire is like that lion to devour them. That's not what you are to do. But to love them. And then at the end of that chapter, this is one of my favorite ones, verse 26, kind of a bookend for that. Let us not become boastful or conceited. If I'm the older and I'm the stronger, I might look at myself as I'm bigger and I'm better than you. And so here's what we do when that happens, the next phrase. Not challenging one another, envying one another. And the word is you bring a challenge upon them. Kind of like in the Old West with the gun duels. Like, I'm the fastest. I know I'm the fastest. Why don't you come out here and duel with me? And we say that to our brothers and sisters, that I'm the biggest, I'm the baddest, and I'll show you. Why don't you come to fight me? And he says, that's not what you do. You don't challenge. Look out for them. Their own challenges will come. And guess what? That gets us to the second point. Because we will have challenges. There will be problems between us. The brother's keeper solves the problems. He strives for peace with everyone. And as much as it depends on him, he lives peaceably with all. Even that brother or that sister that drives him insane. He wants that peace. He strives for that. And you remember Jacob and Esau. They had some problems, to say the least, didn't they? Esau was so angry that Jacob had deceived their father into getting the blessing that he wanted to kill him. Surprise, surprise, that family wants to kill their siblings. They want to kill him. Jacob runs away. At least 14 years later, because we know that Jacob worked 7 years for Leah and 7 years for Rachel. So at least 14 years later, Jacob's finally going to come back home. And he's scared to death of his brother Esau. And he's sending all these gifts, everything that he's got, and he's separating his family to protect them. Because he wants his brother to be okay with him now. And guess what Esau does? Esau comes with 400 men to help him. Even though Jacob may have thought the 400 men were his army and they were coming to kill him. Because they run to meet Jacob. And he says, it's okay. They worked it out. They had their peace. And so if your brother sins against you, and it will happen, Matthew 18 and verse 15 tells us to do what? You go and tell him his fault. And you remember the rest of the verse, right? Between you and him alone. You don't go tell mom. You don't go tell your other brother. You don't tell anybody else. You tell him. Because the problem isn't with anybody else. The problem is between you two. And guess what it says he does if he hears you? You've gained a brother. If he repents and he realizes he's done you wrong, you gained him. You've got him back. And you want that. Because you don't want to lose your brother. You don't want to be estranged from him. You want him. So if he sins against you, you're also told in Luke 17, rebuke him. And if he repents, this may be the hardest one, forgive him. Man,
hard with it with our physical family as it is with our spiritual family. For some reason, we always say blood is thicker than water. I grew up with you. We spent a lot of time together. We've got all of this. And so I want my physical family back. Well, for some reason, when it comes to the spiritual family, we're a little more reluctant to, one, go and talk to them, and two, forgive them. And the point would be, you forgive them. And if you sinned against them, which you will, Matthew 5 says in the Sermon on the Mount, you're there and you're offering, drop it. Come to terms quickly. Be reconciled quickly. Don't let it go on. Don't let it fester. You take initiative. You solve the problem. That's what a brother's keeper does. And finally, you bear each other's burdens. You got your own problems. Back to Galatians 6. They were devouring. They were consuming. They were challenging. And they were envying one another when they should have been in chapter 6 and verse 1. If anyone is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, looking to yourself so that you will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Stop fighting. Work together. But when you go to help them, you do it in gentleness. And those of you who are upstairs in our Wednesday night class, meekness, that strength that is under control, that's how you go. Because I like the ESV and some of the other translations there, where the New American Standard says, you're looking at yourself. The thing is, you watch yourself. The idea of you taking guard, you're keeping yourself while you're trying to help the other. So you're not trying to go to them when you've got a big old log in your life. And they've got a speck. But you're mindful of that. You're thinking of that. You go to them in gentleness and humility. Because you're their yoke fellow. A yoke fellow, we often talk about this, bearing the burden, right? There's a weight to be carried. And so they would have the beast of burden, whether it's a donkey, a mule, or something along those lines, right? And one would have the thing to carry. But man, isn't it a lot easier when you got somebody else to carry something with you? And what would they do to get two together or three together? They would put the yoke over them, wouldn't they? And that's the picture. You have the yoke over you, and your brother has the yoke over him. Work together to pull that weight. You don't say, here you go, it's all on you. You help. You share that burden. Sometimes we do that naturally. And then sometimes we have to remember, that's my brother. A brother's keeper looks out for me. And he does it the right way. The brother's keeper, he solves the problems between them. And the brother's keeper, he helps him carry the burden. That's our purpose. It may not be easy, but that's our job. This morning has not been a lesson about becoming a Christian. But if you know what you need to do, or you need the prayers of the congregation here and help, or thanks, or whatever it is, we ask that you come now. We stand.